You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, this is a special message for pharmacy owners interested in providing more value to your patients while seeing consistently higher revenues and higher margins. I'm talking about the Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack. The UltiGuard Safe Pack provides 100 premium pen needles and a sharps container all in one for the same copay for your patients as pen needles alone. With Pen Needle UltiGuard Safe Pack, you're doing more for your patients and more for your pharmacy's bottom line. Check it out for yourself. Go to UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. That's UltiGuardSafePack.com/podcast. And let us know what you think. And as always, thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast. Pharmacy Podcast Nation. This is the founder of the Pharmacy Podcast, Todd Urey, and welcome back. It is coming into the mid part of the first quarter of 2020. I can't tell you how busy things have been just in our industry. Just got done concentrating on an installment to the PBM Reform podcast series with Antonio Chacha. I want to give a shout out to him. He did an amazing job bringing a lot of clarity to myself and hundreds of pharmacists that have listened to that episode, and we've received a ton of great feedback. Also, I want to give a shout out to Dr. Madeline Aquiano, who is the leader of the Lux Pharmacist podcast, who interviewed Camille Shire, Miss America. What an exciting episode that was. If you haven't heard that, it's very inspirational to listen to Camille give her testimony of her belief in healthcare and pharmacy and a servant leader and just being a passionate scientist, which she's just amazing. And I feel like I've hit a home run because we're coming up with another interview here today with Mr. Scott Knorr. Dr. Knorr is an amazing, once again, servant leader of himself that's looking for a way to improve the pharmacy industry. He has been part of the Cleveland Clinic team for nearly 10 years and now is taking the helm of the American Pharmacists Association, which I'm super excited about to get you before you get way too busy to even talk to me, Scott. But welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation.
Todd, thanks so much. I the company of the folks you just mentioned, Antonio Chacha is one of my best friends, and he clearly blew the lid off the PBM shenanigans in Ohio. And I think Camille's got to be a lot more interesting to me than me. So I'm glad you're going down the food chain and you picked off the good folks first. But hey, I'm still glad to be here.
I always like to balance it with more personal interviews versus the business of pharmacy, and we crawl into the weeds of clinical, which I'm not very good at because I'm not a pharmacist. I'm just pharmacist's greatest fan. And but to have you here and to preface your new mission as leader of the American Pharmacists Association is very exciting. And I listened to an interview that you did with Dr. Eric Geyer on his political focused podcast, and I really enjoyed that. I'm going to actually put that in our show notes for people to reference of additional information about you. However, let's jump into the new role that you have with the American Pharmacists Association and just give us kind of your viewpoint of where you'd like to see pharmacists go in this new decade.
Yeah, Todd, absolutely. So, as you mentioned, for the last 9 years, I've been the chief pharmacy officer here at the Cleveland Clinic, which is an amazing organization, and we've built a fantastic pharmacy enterprise, and I'm very proud of that. So the good news is for the Cleveland Clinic that the guy taking over, Sam Calabrese, is smarter and better looking than me, and they're going to do just fine. So I'm very proud of the team here, but I'm thrilled to be taking over as the 13th CEO of the American Pharmacists Association. So I finish up here in the end of March, April, I'm taking a little time off and moving. May 1st, I actually start as the CEO designate. Tom Menigan is currently the CEO, and he doesn't retire until the end of June. So I'm going to be mentored by Tom for a couple years. He's going to introduce me to everyone in DC, and I take over officially July 1st. So that's kind of the timeline. You asked a little bit about the vision. Well, I certainly know a lot about pharmacy, and you know, a lot of folks have probably thought when this was announced, who's this Knorr guy? My professional home has been on the health system side and not on the APHA side. I've done a lot of advocacy, been very involved professionally, and had a lot of fun doing that. But you know, the Cleveland Clinic here has an incredible pharmacy enterprise. So I've got, I don't know, 1,500 and some employees with a $1.4 billion drug budget. We've got 20 community pharmacies. We've got a specialty pharmacy, home infusion pharmacy, mail order pharmacy, all kinds of hospitals all over in not only the U.S., but Abu Dhabi and London. So I know pharmacy across the spectrum. I know community pharmacy. I've dealt with the PBM issues. I know what DIR fees are. You know, we got stuck with $6.5 million of DIR fees. So my vision, you know, I think if I could just sum it up is, you know, APHA already is, you know, but we're going to be laser focused on empowering pharmacists to care for patients, you know, because that's what we do. And how do we do that? We do that through a lot of ways. And, you know, legislatively, and as I mentioned on Eric's podcast, you know, the federal government, we're going to push like crazy for provider status. We're going to push on DIR fees and PBM reform. Having said that, you know, it's pretty hard to get anything done in Washington. You know, just turn on the TV, right? And the folks at the states are the ones that really get things done. You just mentioned Antonio Chacha, and he's incredible with the collaborative practice law he got passed. We have provider status passed in Ohio. Then you got folks like Kate Gaynor in Iowa, Micah Cost down in Tennessee, Michael Jackson in Florida, who just worked with Antonio and exposed that the CVS Caremark company pays their own pharmacists significantly more than they pay retail pharmacists. So, you know, the vision again is to empower pharmacists to care for patients. We're going to do that through legislation, through supporting our states, through continuing to develop, you know, education for pharmacists and CE and to help them throughout their careers. And the other article that was just, you know, in the Times about the chaos in chain pharmacies, we've got so many of our sisters and brothers that are, you know, frustrated in their jobs. They've all got pharmacy degrees. They want to care for patients and they're man in the drive-through window, and it's just crazy. So we're going to look at helping them. So the vision is to pull all of pharmacy together. You know, APHA started as the organization 168 years ago in 1852. And since then, a lot of niche organizations have come around, and they serve members' specific needs. Well, those are fantastic organizations. I'm a member of a lot of them, but we're going to make sure people, every pharmacist feels that APHA is their home and is advocating for them.
So when I hear comments and initiatives on provider status, it gets me excited because of what a pharmacist is capable of doing in the five sectors of pharmacy: compounding, community, health system, specialty, in long-term care, senior care. And within that, there's even subsectors of what a pharmacist can do. There are organizations, Scott, that are not waiting for provider status that have been very aggressive. You know very well Brad Tice and his initiative with Aspen Health and using the Uber-like services and technology to find a pharmacist to assign to a patient for a specific case that's needed and then distribute those healthcare services through an app and through technology and data mining and what, you know, can come of that. And I think those clinical services through technology are going to expand the role of pharmacists, including other facets of digging into some of this new technology that's coming out, including us finally embracing pharmacogenomics and embracing pharmacist distributing medications and being able to do immunizations and so many of the things that we've been sitting around, you know, 5-10 years and we're doing it and it's progressing. And I feel like it's following in parallel the political efforts to show Congress, CMS, and our healthcare at large where pharmacists fit because they've already been there. And I just want your viewpoints on that, because I've been frustrated as your fan to watch the roadblocks that you've run into, and you're still doing it. Pharmacists are still doing what the payment systems are saying that they can't do, but it's just from a payment perspective. You're turning around and I'm watching, well, pharmacists are already doing that.
Yeah. You know, great, Todd. And, you know, for the record, after listening to that, I'm just really glad that you didn't apply for this job, because I think it would have been a tough call, because you clearly you nailed so many of the issues that are there.
The APHA's annual, I would love to show you. You can call it Pharmacist Number One Fan, and I'll gladly come in and be a talking head. I'm the Ryan Seacrest of pharmacy.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, you clearly know your stuff, and I appreciate that. Well, and that's good, and you're helping educate society, because that's what we need to do. But you mentioned, yeah, pharmacists aren't waiting, and you mentioned Brad Tice. Well, Brad's my boss, right? He's the one that formally called me and offered, as he's the president of APHA. And when I think of Brad, I think of, you know, pharmacists throughout history have been entrepreneurs, right? So in order to stay ahead of the chain pharmacies as they get gobbled up, they have to think and act and do things. And the folks that are still out there are able to be creative and think of new services and new ways to do that. You know, I know Brad's also looking at pharmacogenomics next. So, you know, not just the Uber model for MTM, but those, you know, those are the kind of folks that just, you know, constantly push the envelope. And, you know, in a health system like we've got, we're fortunate, you know, so I can speak from the Cleveland Clinic experience that, we're able to have pharmacists do a lot of things. So, as I mentioned before, the real work happens at the state, because the federal government, I mean, we're going to push hard. We're going to get provider status, ideally. We're also going to support the states who get it, collect that data, and use that with the federal government. But when we got our Collaborative Practice Act going, my goodness, you know, we went from 2 pharmacists embedded in our medicine clinics to 29. And guess what? You know, it's not billing there. It's controlling costs and quality. So those pharmacists we put there, the hemoglobin A1Cs are better for the patients in those medical clinics. And then we are not messing around in the retail. So our community pharmacies, we've got 20 of those. And collaborative practice isn't just for PGY2 trained specialists in ambulatory care. Our retail sisters and brothers in our Cleveland Clinic pharmacies are starting to do refill authorizations through collaborative practice. We're going to be doing formulary substitutions. And I really see them more and more as becoming physician extenders in our retail pharmacies. You know, you mentioned payment and reform. You know, I'm glad to see, I think it's the Arkansas case where the Supreme Court's gonna hear our ability to regulate PBMs. That's huge. But I tell you, with these guys, it's whack-a-mole. I mean, you squeeze them here and they figure out a new way to, you know, rob you over there. If they would use all of the thought power they have for good, you know, they'd be able to solve world peace or global warming or something. You know, there's a lot of creativity that goes into sticking it to the public and the taxpayers and insurance. So it's unfortunate, but you're right. People aren't waiting around. Pharmacists are doing incredible things all over the country.
It's so true. I see it as I sit back and watch the pieces falling in place. There's an organization called RxVIP Concierge, which are going into physician offices on one day a week, sitting down with the physician after they have explained the program and doing the chart reviews of the most serious chronic patients and giving the physician at that time insights to how to improve that patient's health and even meeting with the patient. All of this being done at no charge to the physician, But the billing for such of these services, which can be done in a myriad of ways, including something called Incident 2, but you can also turn around and utilize providers on the back end through like an iPad integration where you're billing codes out for what you're doing in the physician's office and then turn around and do some testing and follow-up. We know this works. We know that community are seeing their pharmacists 10 times more than their physician, and the follow-up for adherence is necessary in the most serious of chronic disease states, and the technology is coming to support that. That's why when I hear about Brad's initiatives with Aspen Health, when I hear about Harry Travis and the digestible eTect RX pill, when I listen to Timothy Ungst at presentations, Dr. Ungst in the his research in technology and the prescribed technologies as an app. You're actually getting a prescription that's an app to coincide with a medication. There's absolutely at this time and stage as a hopeful, always the glass for me is always half full. I know that there's disarray. I know that there's turmoil. We know that there's going to be more layoffs in the chain environment. But there's going to be an adjustment and a settling of all of this disruption, which is going to bring in the new age of what is pharmacy and how the pharmacist will be doing things 1 year, 5 years, 10 years from now that we've never heard about. That 5 years ago, we would have said, what are you talking about? A data analytics individual concentrating on oncology medications to dig down and to find out, you know, what you should be eating in conjunction with a nutritionist, and how does that make sense? And we are going to have those roles for the most aggressive and creative pharmacists that are out there. We have a station that's dedicated to our students called Pharmacy Future Leaders. And when I hear the pharmacist interviewing the pharmacist or the pharmacist student interviewing the pharmacist student, it makes me excited because they're starting to get it. They're starting to realize, wow, my future is not necessarily chain, or it's not necessarily health system, or it's not necessarily a traditional role. My future is something that I'm going to go create based on the poster that I just did at the, you know, American Pharmacist annual convention. And that kind of stuff, Scott, is what sets me on fire.
Yeah, and you know, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned, you know, big data and AI. You know, I see, Todd, pharmacists more and more getting into population health management. That's certainly what we've been doing here at the Cleveland Clinic. And we have, you know, health systems have electronic health records with just incredible amounts of data. And there's been, you know, I try to read broadly the press to understand what's going on in other industries, but you know, Google is certainly partnering with Ascension and Mayo, and Cleveland Clinic is, you know, probably ready to sign contracts with somebody for big data. And so in the future, it's more who are the right patients, right? You know, it's inefficient. It'd be great for a pharmacist to every patient to have their own pharmacist, but who are the right patients? Who are the most at risk? What data can we look at so our pharmacists can proactively reach them and reach them via different mediums based on what's going to work best for those patients? You know, so ambulatory care is growing dramatically. I was just visiting my good friend, Mike Evans, the chief pharmacy officer at Geisinger, and, they have 90 pharmacists embedded in their medicine clinics and telehealth clinics. And Michael told me the next 2 years he's going to hire 60 more pharmacists to do just that, to keep patients healthy, not just to tune them up when they're really sick. But, you know, so that's where we're going. You know, ambulatory care, population health management, technology, pharmacogenomics. I have my own, it's not my personally, but the Cleveland Clinic, we have a PharmD, PhD. She's fantastic, who's heading up our pharmacogenomics here at the Cleveland Clinic. And, you know, just really looking forward to helping folks across all sites of care in pharmacy embrace the opportunities that you just talked about.
We had an organization approach us called PsychU, which was an organization that concentrates on mental health. and they have an entire division that's going to be ran and delivering care services specifically for mental health from pharmacists. And that just blows me away that I get so excited where we're thinking what psychotropics are in place and how sensitive those are, and what better healthcare provider to be there the entire time from inception, the beginning of the therapy, to the transfer of the therapy at that 6 month or that third year, to ensure that the patient is transitioning maybe from something else that comes out. But to have that pharmacist involved along the way in mental health, especially with much of what's come of our news and current events and shootings and different things like that, like the most underutilized, you know, healthcare professional in our arsenal of expertise is most definitely the pharmacist.
Well, Todd, you nailed it. You know, so I just mentioned all the ambulatory pharmacists, and you know, Kaiser is that they figured this out decades ago, right? But again, they're incented because they're in the insurance company and the provider. So for them, it's not about billing. I mean, now I'm all for pharmacist billing if nurses, practitioners, and PAs can bill. So we need to do that. But it's also as we move into to more at risk, and people think of chronic diseases, hypertension, diabetes, lipids, and our pharmacists are amazing at doing that, right? But depression is a chronic disease, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's an area that we're talking here about how our pharmacists can get more involved, and that needs any chronic disease like that, pharmacists can absolutely manage. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And mental health, psych meds, you know, a tremendous opportunity for us to help our physicians, who, quite frankly, there are not enough. There are not enough psychiatrists. I just read a study by, I'm not very good at, quoting exact numbers, by whatever year it is, we're going to be 122,000 physicians short. So, you know, our physicians here at the clinic embrace interdisciplinary care. We need to have those partnerships with our community pharmacists and ambulatory care pharmacists to partner with insurance companies, with health systems, to keep patients healthy.
Absolutely. It kind of folds back to what you and I were just talking about in mentioning the science of drug efficacy and the absorption of that medication. And we know that the FDA has flagged psychotropic medications in those biomarker red flag sections where PGX tests should probably be ran. And like I said, we all know what person and an individual in the healthcare team that should be there holding the hand of that patient alongside of that psychiatrist or counselor or whomever. I'm excited to see where that's going to go. This returns me to kind of the catch-all for me and what stresses me out, and that's, you know, the pharmacy benefit managers that are kind of holding hostage the effectiveness of pharmacists and the effectiveness of pharmacy in healthcare based on the focus on profit rather than focus on using Medicaid money to help and deliver therapies to the patients that need it most. And then obviously the private too, but right now, because of the Medicaid systems being audited and showing mounds and mounds of data, as you and I both mentioned and Eric has mentioned on his podcast, that's the place that we need to inspect, because if we can straighten it out, and I'm not saying let's throw out all the PBMs, I think they have their place, but I am saying we most definitely have to comb through the millions upon millions that are going in back into the form of profit through those systems rather than being used to deliver more care to more patients. And part of that needs to be a reform for pharmacists' involvement specifically for our most chronic patients in the sectors of healthcare that are needed most, based on, again, Scott, the most expensive of medications, that if we had pharmacists involved from the beginning to end of a patient, whether they pass away or whether they're not on it anymore, we have to have that involvement. So I hope that the PBM reform isn't just hammering down on rebate and spread pricing and all of the kind of the whack-a-moles that are there, as you mentioned too, but also where the pharmacist needs to be fit into this to deliver the best care, which is going to present us with efficiency of the money being used.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, along with provider status, so that pharmacists can actually perform cognitive functions instead of, you know, count by five really fast, PBM reform has got to be it. And you're right. And there are a lot of really good pharmacists working in PBMs who are trying to help save costs and manage it. But overall, I mean, I got to say, the PBMs, you know, the roles with the switch is important, and there can be some opportunity, but they just are a huge suck. They suck so much money out of the health system without providing any real value. I mean, it's almost evil how much they take out without helping things. If you look at the infrastructure, and you know, in Ohio, what was it? I don't know, $220 million in 1 year from Medicaid. Florida, we saw that they're paying their own pharmacies more with CVS Caremark than others. It's just, it's anti-competitive. And it's this three-headed oligopoly, right? There's three big PBMs, and you have the insurance company owning the PBM, owning the pharmacies. They lock everybody out. They keep all the money for themselves. When they do have to pay another pharmacy, they pay them less. They hit them with DIR fees, which have absolutely no basis on quality. It's just a money grab. And you can whine about that. I mean, we need to fight that, absolutely. But we also need to do the things you're talking about in the future, with pharmacists doing more clinical functions. But it's not a level playing field, you know. Our pharmacists, our community pharmacists, they can run circles around the chains if there's a level playing field. But they just, it's so anti-competitive. You know, here in Ohio, there's the Patriots at the Columbus Dispatch that Antonio fed everything to, you know, showed that not only do they know they're paying community pharmacists less, but then they're sending them letters to buy their stores because they know they're going broke because they're sticking it to them so hard. So PBM reform is right up there at the very top. We got to fight the three-headed oligopolies and, you know, let our pharmacists do what they went to school for.
Absolutely. Well, I am excited about your new role and the impact that you'll have in conjunction with other champions that are in this together. I'd like to see the associations work tighter together than what they have. I'm seeing walls starting to be lowered, and NCPA and the ASCP and the NASP, and all of these organizations are starting to realize that working together for a base, which is AKA the 283,000 pharmacists that are active that are out there, is what's necessary. And then obviously we have our specialties that we need to concentrate on support as associations. But I want to let you know I'm excited about your new role. I want to leave this as an open door for you to use the Pharmacy Podcast Network, reaching over 78,000 listeners out there, as your platform, because this publication is the Pharmacist's Podcast. I want every pharmacist listening right now to know that if you have something that you want researched or talked about or kicked around, we have 33 stations, 45 hosts. This is a platform that I envisioned to deliver content when we're driving to work or we're jogging or we're doing something that all you can do is use your ears, is listen and learn and act, take action of what we can do to support you, the pharmacist, who ultimately will make our patient lives that much better. So, Scott, I hope that you'll return and come back and give us the nation.
Yeah, Todd, just a couple closing thoughts on that. Thank you. So, you know, I'm thrilled this opportunity. There's an amazing staff at APHA, just, you know, folks who are dedicated to the pharmacy. The Board of Trustees, when they hired me, they were looking for bold leadership. You know, these are challenging times. I mean, you know, we got PillPack and Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway and everything going on in technology and disruption. So we need to figure out a way through that. And, you know, APHA has always advocated for all pharmacists. You know, in the future, we're thinking futuristic. We're gonna harness the potential of that incredible staff, the power of our Board of Trustees. But I tell you what, this is a plea. We need members, okay? Especially, we're going to take a hit. you know, PBMs don't like me, right? They shouldn't, because I'm going after them. I'm going after PBMs for reform. APHA is going to fight to the death to make PBMs accountable for how they've sucked all the profit out of the health systems and society into their personal coffers. But we need folks to join APHA. I can't do it alone. APHA can't do it alone. You know, if I'm not getting any money from Caremark, right, we need to have members attend meetings. We need to have them show up. We need to have them volunteer. We need to rally the troops. Everyone needs to join APHA, because we're going to fight like you've never seen us fight to drive this profession, to drive our profession forward.
That is awesome. Well, you have my support, and however we can help, we'd like to be leveraged to get messaging out there. And I'm excited about your role, Scott, and congratulations. And we'll be here to support you.
All right. And join your state organizations. They're the patriots that really get it done, you know, and we're going to work hard with the states to really make a difference. Todd, thanks so much for what you do here, for getting the message out. And I will definitely be in contact with you to help drive this this profession that we're so passionate about to help us take care of patients. We're going to empower pharmacists to take care of patients. Thank you for your part in that.
Thank you. You're listening to Scott Knorr on the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. And as always, we thank you so much for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you enjoy the leading podcast network dedicated to the business and profession of pharmacy, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know which channel is your favorite. And remember, the pharmacist is the hub of healthcare.